gathered in their masses, just like witches at black masses. Evil minds that plot destruction, sorcerer of death's construction. In the fields the bodies burning, as the war machine keeps turning. Death and hatred to mankind, poisoning their brainwashed minds. Oh, Lord, yeah.
Go with Black Sabbath and War Pigs. That's a 7-minute song. We only played about a little over half of it, but anyhow, it's pretty good stuff. Yeah. White Aryan Resistance Radio calling. White Aryan Resistance Radio Network calling. This is Tom Metzger, Terrible Tommy, in the bunker right here in North Central Indiana on a... It's interesting. Temperature's up to 50, but it's cold, you know? And it was up about 20 this morning. So I don't understand this. Normally when it gets up to 50, it's fairly warm. But anyhow, the wind is cold. It's cold, baby. Hey, it's April the 4th, 2015. Almost lost a couple of years there. And it's Saturn's Day. We've got some things for you here. So let's start off with a little irreverence. How about that, okay?
So let's have an Easter story. But unlike a Caesar or a Cleopatra, the most important thing about Jesus was not his noble life, but his miserable death and glorious resurrection. So it certainly is surprising that Christians, even the earliest Christians, had no idea exactly when their Saviour died and by divine miracle returned to life. After all, what matters most to Christians, as they never cease to tell you, are not the sublime teachings of the holy carpenter, nor even the wondrous healings of a few randomly encountered blind, deaf, and dumb cripples and lunatics. No, what matters most is his pathetic crucifixion and emergence alive from his tomb. Now, Christians don't know the year of this fabulous miracle. Theologians and New Testament scholars have offered every possibility from the year 30 through to the year 36. A curious uncertainty, to be sure. But that uncertainty is compounded when you ask them to tell you the exact date. Some of them might be smart and say the 14th Nisan, a date in the Jewish calendar. But that date changes every year. Believe it or not, Christians calculate the date of their Lord's life and death act. They calculate it, don't they know? The date of Easter can vary everywhere between March 22nd and April 25th. 35 possible dates. Do we need to calculate the date that Abraham Lincoln was assassinated? It was actually a Good Friday, April the 14th, 1865. We know that from historical sources. Do we need to calculate the date of Julius Caesar's assassination? No, we don't. It was March the 15th, 44 BC. It's a matter of verifiable history. But Jesus wasn't a president or an emperor, will say our Christian friends. He was only a carpenter, and of course co-creator of the universe. But just hold on there. His dying and resurrection are the very essence of Christianity. If the Gospelers can remember and recall Jesus' very words and dire warnings to Pharisees and scribes, how is it that no Christian, even 20 centuries ago, could say precisely when the laws of the universe were suspended and a dead man appeared alive again? Why did they have to start calculating the date, and not by consulting the works of historians, but by looking at astronomical tables and the zodiac? In the early church, Christians actually had to ask their local Jews when was the date of the Jewish Passover, and the Lord's Passion was celebrated accordingly. Because Jews came up with different dates in different cities, the Christians too marked their Lord's death and resurrection on different days. The date had nothing to do with history, but everything to do with primitive astronomy and astrology. In Rome, they weren't happy with this. They wanted to shift the event to the day on which the pagans celebrated their various sun gods. Sunday, of course. At the Council of Nicaea in 325, the Emperor Constantine ordered the church to stop following the practice of the Jews. The council determined a formula by which Easter should be calculated, and glory be, established the date of Easter as the first Sunday after the full moon. And this full moon was the one that followed the spring equinox. So it was the position of the sun and the moon which determines this glorious miracle of Jesus. It isn't remembered history. It's a fabrication derived from a verse that you'll find in Leviticus 23:5. In the 14th day of the first month at even is the Lord's Passover. From that verse, the Christians fabricated their glorious celebration of the Lord's death and resurrection. But it isn't true. It isn't history. It's just more astounding rubbish. Precious challenges that Christian apologists throw down to skeptics is the so-called empty tomb. Emptiness, it seems, is at the very heart of the Christian faith. You have no explanation, say the apologists, which means the empty tomb must be proof of the resurrection. We have, of course, entered the Christian twilight zone, a world in which a whole series of zeros are added up to produce 100% gold-plated rubbish. To illustrate this point, let me digress for a moment to tell the wondrous tale of the House of the Holy Family that can be seen to this very day, not in Nazareth, but in Loreto, a small town on the Adriatic coast of Italy. In the year 1472, Pope Sixtus IV announced to a delighted Catholic faithful that the house of Jesus, his mum and his dad, was to be seen only a pilgrim's walk away from Rome. It had apparently been transported there 200 years earlier from its original site in Galilee by angels. But in case there were doubters of this startling claim, a posse of 16 reputable citizens of Loreto were dispatched to Nazareth, where they were able to confirm with their own eyes that there was no holy house to be found anywhere in Nazareth. What more evidence could there be that angels had indeed transported the childhood home of Jesus to Italy? Christians are very fond of this reality inversion method. They supplement the empty tomb challenge with a whole series of empty spaces. For example, not one of the Gospels attempts to describe the resurrection. This apparently has the ring of truth about it. No body of Jesus was ever produced, which it seems would have scuttled the claims of a resurrection straight away. No one, it seems, venerated the tomb. Now, unless you are wearing the reality distortion lenses of Christian faith, you will immediately see there is something very wrong with this childish flimflam. Look, there it isn't. I find it quite laughable that the tomb is described as empty. If you entered a room in which you found one or two angels, and especially if they spoke in unison to you, would you come away saying, "Yep, there was nobody there"? The angels are an essential element of the entire yarn. What would an empty tomb prove anyway? At any one time, there would have been dozens of recently dug tombs in Jerusalem. People died on a regular basis, then as now. The ancient city was ringed by a necropolis with many thousands of tombs. It is only the testimony of an angel that transforms a hole in the ground into something special. And do we believe in angels? What possible alternative explanations is there for the failure of early Christians to venerate a tomb? Well, one compelling alternative is that until Emperor Constantine in the 4th century had a temple of Venus demolished in Jerusalem to make way for a big church, a tomb of Jesus had no reality at all. As a result of Constantine, an anonymous tomb was chosen as the Holy Sepulchre, and veneration began then and has never stopped. What we had in the revolution of Constantine was the commencement of a manufacture of artifacts to support a fable that had no other support. Why didn't the Jewish high priest produce a body to scotch the claims of the early Christians? Perhaps for no more complicated reason than that they had never heard of a Jesus of Nazareth. They had never trampled on their laws relating to the Passover and had never ignored laws governing the trial and execution of criminals. We will, of course, in the next week or two hear, yet again, this silly fable of an empty tomb and a resurrected God-man. But it isn't true. It isn't history. It's just more amazing rubbish from the New Testament.
Well, it took me a long time to break away from this nonsense, and I've felt freer ever since. Yeah, it's like somebody took a weight off my shoulders to finally learn the truth about how we've been conned since our childhood and our parents and their parents and their parents and their parents and on back. And just think of how history has been affected by these beliefs and how wars have come about and how genocide has come about and how all these things have come about because of these stories. And that's what they are, the greatest story ever told. And this is, well, tomorrow will be their big day. And there'll be hundreds of them in their nice shiny cars go by my house on the way to the mind control center tomorrow for Easter. And no matter what sign I put up out front, and once in a while I tell them about it, they just turn their head the other way and pretend it's not there. Yeah. I told you yesterday about these, or maybe it was the day before, about this KKK conspiracy in the Florida prisons to kill a guy. And they show the pictures of the culprits here on the internet. And one's obviously a spick, a mestizo, a non-white, Spanish-speaking, jerky-looking guy. The other guy's white. Well, anyhow, that's the way it goes. Ask the question in here, are Klan members allowed to be employed by the prison guards? Well, there's many, many prison guards that have belonged to racist organizations. I don't see how they would want to do it, except they just need a job. In fact, I had one contact for years. It was a female prison guard. In fact, there's, I think, another couple of them females that were prison guards. But the smart ones don't tell anybody, obviously. But if it gets out, they do. They usually fire them. I think they always fire them. You know, the argument over this Indiana law that the supposedly Christian representatives put together has gotten so ridiculous. The left, the progressives, have gone crazy. Listen to this. If the Ku Klux Klan can force a black baker to make racist KKK cakes, does this mean Memories Pizza should be automatically be forced to serve gay weddings? If that is the case, should the Westboro Baptist Church be allowed to force gay bakers to make cakes with "God hates fags" written on them? These questions may be rhetorical, but if these scenarios did ever occur, there's already disagreement over how they should be handled. So what does this mean for supporters and opponents of Indiana's religious freedom law? Well, it's crazy. It's ridiculous. And this has happened to me many times. I've taken things in to be printed. One local printer here, he printed things for me for a long time, and they weren't that wild, really. And he came to the counter one day and said, "Tom, I can't print this stuff anymore." And I said, "Okay." So I went to his competitor and had him do it. That's all it takes. But maybe based on this law, I could sue the damn printer. Pretty soon you can make anybody do anything. Well, that's how ridiculous it's getting. And like I say, I only support one point of view, total and complete ability to discriminate against anybody or anything for any reason. Totally free. That's the only way you can make it right. I think I may do a fact-finding trip on Monday because I find that Walkerton's only about 50 minutes away from my domicile. That's pretty close, so I may take a casual drive and see if I can buy a pizza. Just remember, the ability to discriminate separates us from slaves. Slaves cannot discriminate. Free men can discriminate. Of course, you realize these stories are all false flag controversies and crises that is expanded and pushed by certain elements, of course, most of the press, pushed by the corporate heads for political reasons. Number one, to keep your mind off all the war going on over in the Middle East. Number two, to keep your mind off the discussions of the in Iran. To keep your mind off the we're running out of water and we're totally invaded by millions of mestizos and all the other really important things we need to be thinking about. They're worrying about whether somebody makes a cake for homosexuals. As far as I'm concerned, it's all a public health issue. Why is that? Well, if two guys are good friends and like each other, want to live together, I don't give a damn. It's no skin off my nose. But the problem is there's a practice of using your joystick to stick it in a black hole of dirty shit. And that's a public health issue. And I never hear anybody arguing about that or showing these type of lewd acts on TV. But truly it is a public health issue. I sometimes think that we're moving really very rapidly back into the Dark Ages. An admitted member of the KKK is fighting against charges for crimes he says were actually created by the government in an attempt to snare him. Well, what's new? The attorney for Glendon Scott Crawford finds claims of outrageous government conduct, filed claims after Crawford was charged with attempting to build a death ray machine capable of killing people with high amounts of radiation. Initially, Crawford had contacted U.S. Representative Chris Gibson, area Jewish organizations, and Israel embassy, among others, quote, with what he believed was a never-before-considered idea, and the idea only to use on Islamic terrorists, unquote. The motion continued, saying, quote, until his path crossed that of the government, he had never had a device or money or motivation to become involved in the actual device. Attorney Kevin Lubrand said that the only reason the alleged crimes went so far as they did was a sting operation set up by the government, which basically pushed Crawford into acting on his plans to create such a weapon. When the government, quote, when the government first had contact with Crawford, he was not committing a criminal offense. From that beginning to his indictment, the plot alleges against the defendant was instigated, planned, funded, supplied, and manufactured by the government. Lubrand said, well, of course, this goes on all the time. The prisons are filled with people who've been railroaded that way. This wholesale government fabrication of a crime aimed at ensnaring Crawford, who was neither previously engaged or nor was planning a similar offense, violates Crawford's due process. This shocks the universal sense of justice and demands dismissal of the indictment. Crawford, 50, and Eric Feit, 56, were both charged in the plot to create the device, which Crawford intended to use specifically against Muslims. Oh, so they could build a death ray machine? Give me a fucking break. That's how far the Justice Department will go and how stupid, and I believe they are stupid enough to maybe have believed they could build a death ray machine. We're living in a goddamn zoo from top to bottom. Here's another bizarre story, and the interesting thing about it, it's about Edgar Ray Killen, who was convicted a few years ago of, you know, 30 years ago, being involved in something, some kind of violence with the Klan. In fact, I was in contact with his family, sent him a few bucks. I remember a year or so ago, I've had no other contact with his family since then. Jackson, Mississippi. There's that damn town comes up all the time. A black man says Edgar Ray Killen, a reputed Ku Klux Klan leader imprisoned for 3 civil rights workers' deaths in Mississippi, gave him power of attorney and land rights when he shared a prison cell. Former cellmate James Stern said at a news conference Thursday that he also owns book and movie rights to Killen's life story. Stern said he transferred 40 acres of Killen's land last month to a nonprofit under his control. Killen's lawyer, Robert Ratliff, says Killen denies signing over anything to Stern. Ratliff says he'll defend the Killen property rights because he's 87, has a brain injury, and people try to exploit him or profit from being associated with him. Killen is serving 60 years in prison for manslaughter in the 64 deaths. Now, there's another bizarre story, and obviously the only way that Edgar Ray Killen would transfer anything over to anybody, especially a nigger, would be if he's suffering from dementia and other problems in the brain. So they should be able to get this squashed, but knowing the way it is nowadays, anything can happen, no matter how crazy it is. Here's another wild one. I haven't got the rest of the story, but it says, was the assassination of Martin Luther King Jr. after a $100,000 KKK bounty? Well, as far as I'm concerned, if the KKK could come up with $100,000 to get to Martin Luther King, they must be the most different Klan that I ever met. Most of the people I ever met in the Klan, and even myself when I was in the Klan, we didn't have enough money to hardly do anything because nobody ever paid their dues. Interesting article here. Every time we think we've seen the last of the trials for civil rights era acts, they say atrocities, I say acts, it seems prosecutors will parade some stooped white-haired defendant before the cameras in shackles, just like they do the veterans of the German military, and even people from other countries that were hired by the Germans. Byron De La Beckwith, Sam Bowers, Bobby Frank, Cherry, Edgar Ray Killen, James Ford Seal. There is no statute of limitations on murder, and the age of infirmity offers no refuge for the guilty. These cases have proved. But if justice has an enemy, it's time. And now officials are conceding that the spectacle of juries passing judgment on such aging killers is just about past. The Department of Justice, under its five-year-old cold case initiative, and the 2007 Emmett Till Unsolved Civil Rights Crime Act, has combed through that dark period of American history when the South was trying to defend itself against the federal invasion, seeking any cases that could still be prosecuted, isolating 111 incidents involving 124 deaths. Investigators have sought to determine whether those who died were victims of racial motivated crimes, and then whether there's anyone left to charge. Ooh, just a minute here. Of all the crime going on in this country, and all the black perpetrated crimes against whites, they've still got plenty of time to beat the bushes looking for some poor bastard to get for the civil wrong stuff. In about two-thirds of those cases, FBI agents have hand-delivered letters to the next of kin informing them that the government had taken things as far as they could. Oh, that doesn't make any difference. Just grab somebody and prosecute them. They'll convict them. In some cases, all the suspects are dead. In others, suspect individuals have been acquitted in the past and cannot legally be retried. In a few, the agency can find no evidence that a crime was racially motivated, or even that the death resulted from foul play. Quote, we regret to inform you that we are unable to proceed further with a federal criminal investigation of this matter, unquote. A DOJ official wrote to the daughter of Harry and Harriet Moore, who died following the dynamiting of their Florida home 6 decades ago. Quote, please accept our sincere condolences on the loss of your parents, unquote. Roughly 36 of the reviewed investigations, including the oldest, the Florida lynching of Claude Neal in 1934, remain open. Although the DOJ reported to Congress recently that some state prosecutions are potentially viable, the passage of time and other impediments make the prospect of trials unlikely. Few, if any, of these cases will be prosecuted, the agency acknowledged. Civil wrongs activist Alvin Sykes, who did as much as anyone to push for this effort, well, hell, there's a lot of white people pushing for it, too, especially that jerk at the Jackson, Mississippi newspaper. I got his name in my file. I said the American people won't believe you made a full-faith effort if there wasn't a manhunt, says the head of Emmett Till Justice Campaign, named for the 14-year-old black boy whose lynching in Mississippi helped spark the modern civil rights movement. They made some efforts, but they didn't make an outreach, a manhunt. Uh-oh, here he is. Cleft Palate Mark Potok of the Southern Poverty Law Center says it was clear from the outset that most of the cases that were solvable have been solved. Even without new prosecutions, he says a page has been turned. Well, the time will come when the courts may be pursuing you, Mark, for your crimes against the white race. Who knows? The worm could turn. Always remember that. In country after country, the vanquished many times end up being the pursuers. Quote, I think there is some utility in closing cases, if for no better reason than to assure the families that what can be done at this late date has been done, says Potok, director of the Montgomery-based organization's Intelligence Project. Color me Sam Spade. more like Peter Sellers, you know. Pink Panther. These are people who have been completely left out of the justice process for many decades. So the government does owe them a debt of attention. Oh yeah, and taxpayers, I'm sure, are thrilled to be spending their money on tracking down alleged people from 60 years ago. So I wouldn't say that it's a total waste of taxpayer money. I'd rather see the money spent on pursuing the Soviet people who were involved in atrocities and genocide. How come that's never brought out? During the darkest days of the civil rights movement, civil wrongs struggle, when all white juries acquitted obvious perpetrators or Southern state officials flat refused to prosecute racial killings, families would still turn to the federal government for some modicum of justice. A few years in prison for a federal civil rights violation was better than no punishment at all. Well, I know you want to hang them, you want to kill them, but these people were all involved in the defense of the South, their homeland, and you were instigated by federal forces to invade and destroy their culture, and they had every right to react to that invasion. Decades later, when prosecutors in the New South began reopening some of these old cases, the Department of Justice again stepped forward. Although the statutes of limitations on most federal crimes had long since run out, the FBI's files were filled with yellowed statements from witnesses or informants, some long dead, that might help locals build a case. These collaborations, combined with the work of some dogged reporters, usually white, activists, and persistent family members, produced some stunning convictions in the 1990s and the first decade of the 21st century. But what did it prove? What did it prove? You can't get away with it? Of course people get away with things. I'm sure there are many, 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 many people down there they'll never know about who got away with taking care of black people physically. The most recent was the June 2007 conviction of Seal, a reported former Ku Klux Klansman who many believed long dead. A federal grand jury in Jackson, Mississippi. You know Jackson, Mississippi is the center where of Jew power during the old days and even the Civil War. Yeah, I've got the book. I'll have to read it to you about Jackson. Jackson was the center of Judaism in the South. Well, anyhow, they convicted Seal, then 72, of kidnapping and conspiracy in the torture and drowning of two black youths in 1964. He was sentenced to 3 life terms and died August 2nd in an Indiana prison. Gee, if I'd have known that, I'd probably visit him. But you see, they fought the wrong way down South. I know it was more convenient to kill somebody that's low level and on the street, carrying a placard, you know, stupid placard. But if you're going to kill people, you should have killed the people who were really causing your problem. I mean, really, really causing your problem. You kill people at the top, not at the bottom. FBI, did you get that? That's going to go in my file, I know. But people insist on killing people at the bottom who have no power, no control. That's why, you know, I really condemn that kind of activity and so many people doing hard time for gaining nothing. Now, some may argue both ways on James Earl Ray. I mean, at least he hit the top. He didn't hit the top, but he did a significant thing. And whether you like it or not, or whether you agree it was successful, or whether you think it made it worse or not, he went to the top. He didn't start at the black shoeshine boy. The Bureau also, I say most of the white enemies are white. The worst white enemies are white, not even Jewish. And certainly not black. The Bureau also lent its assistance in the case of former Alabama State Trooper James Fowler, who last year pleaded guilty to manslaughter in the February 18, 1965 shooting death of Jimmie Lee Jackson following a protest march in Marion, Alabama. Fowler, 77, was sentenced to 6 months in jail. Well, that seems more reasonable. Seems more reasonable, but you know, if the South had come together like it should have been and supported their sons and daughters, their political activists, they would not have been able to jail any of these people. But the South, like everywhere else, the minute they thought they were going to lose business in the South and all that kind of stuff, they immediately caved in. All the governors, all of them caved in. After Killen was convicted of manslaughter in 2005 in the so-called Mississippi burning case, activists pushed for charges against a list of what they said were viable prosecution targets remaining. This case of three civil rights workers, 1964 murder, remains technically open. Quote, "I hope we're not done," said John Gidsom, executive director of the Arkansas Delta Truth and Justice Center. Well, there's certainly no white people in power that are going to defend anybody, no matter how ridiculous the charge is. If it has to do with race, they're going to dogpile anybody. So you see, your problem is always at the top with these filthy, rotten, corrupt, degenerate, race-mixing politicians and the people who run the corporations and all that. That's where your problem is. It's not Johnny Ray, the Mississippi shoeshine boy. On the still open list are a couple of cases that fall into a peculiar category. Ones in which someone was acquitted by an all-white jury. You know, that doesn't mean anything, because plenty of guys have been convicted for a couple of hundred years by all-white juries. Whites have been sent to prison and executed for killing blacks in the South and all over the place. So this idea that an all-white jury is just going to automatically let a guy go is nonsense. It does happen, but in most cases it didn't happen. So the possibility of vigilantism is among considerations in deciding when to close such cases, says FBI agent Cynthia Dale Deedle, who until recently was in charge of the cold case effort. Now, what does that mean? So the possibility of vigilantism is among considerations in deciding when to close such cases. Huh. That's an interesting way of looking at it. On the still open list are a couple of cases that fall into a peculiar category, ones in which someone was acquitted by an all-white jury and now admitted to the killing, which was very foolish if they do. So the possibility of it... Oh, I said that before. How does the Department of Justice write a letter that says that? She asked. The person that killed your father is very much alive, still lives in the hometown where you live, and admitted doing it. And there's nothing that we can do or the state can do. Unquote. In other words, you got to kill him yourself. In some cases, like the one against Seal, the Department of Justice used non-civil rights statutes, such as kidnapping resulting in death or involving killings on federal lands to overcome the statute of limitations challenge. I tell you, they'll go to any length. But that's why when the mop flops, our forces or our people or somebody is going to have to do the same thing. They never think that the mop is ever going to flop. That's what's cool about it. the system's crumbling, and as it crumbles, there's going to be an opportunity for a lot of things that are not, there's no opportunity at this time. But that's all right. We'll see what happens. But many of those closed seemed already hopelessly cold when the initiative began. The FBI sent an 8,000-page file to Mississippi officials in August 1955, slaying of Till, the Chicago boy who was tortured and shot for whistling at a white woman. Well, I would see no problem with beating him up. I don't see any reason that he should be killed if he just whistled at a white woman. I somehow thought that there was more to that story than meets the eye. Photos of Till's mangled corpse lying in an open coffin outraged the nation. I always like that, where the press say, outraged the nation. Well, it didn't outrage me. I didn't even see the coffin. They always speak, the press speak for everybody. Yeah, outraged the whole nation. And when they talk on the news all the time about war and stuff, the American people believe this. American people believe that. The admitted killers were long dead, but some thought a case could have been made against others who might have played a role before and after the killing. Well, dig up the goddamn coffins of these guys you think did it and hang them from a tree if you can super glue their bones back together. I like Gorilla Glue myself. Sort of apropos. A local grand jury failed to return any indictments, and the case was officially closed in December 2007. Although the Till Act does not require it, that came from nigger pressure in Chicago and Illinois. And white representatives that want to make sure they get the nigger vote. Yeah, the nigger vote. The FBI has provided detailed reports to the next of kin in cases that were being closed. And also, those representatives that push that stuff, they don't give a shit about the Emmett Till. They probably laugh about Emmett Till in the back room. All they care about is getting people to vote for him. And if pushing something like that, the Emmett Till bill will get blacks to vote for him, they'll do it. That's how depraved they are. That's all they think about. In an effort to nonetheless bring some sense of closure to the family members of these victims, despite a media campaign, the agency, famous but incompetent, has managed to locate relatives of only 95 of the 124 victims, and I bet they're looking real hard. I'll bet those FBI agents are scouring every block of the South to find these people. The Associated Press obtained redacted copies of several letters through the Freedom of Information Act. Survivors of some victims agreed to share their letters with AP reporters. Whoa, they're in the media will make a big deal. A really big deal. Some families are satisfied that the FBI has done all it could do to bring their loved one's killers to justice. You know, it's never considered that the so-called victims were committing crimes when they were killed, that none of these civil rights workers were doing anything wrong. They just assumed that. Others who had allowed themselves to hope feel violated all over again. James Ware never expected much from the reopening of his brother Virgil's case on September 15, 1963, the two were on their way home from a junkyard outside Birmingham, Alabama. They just started a new paper route and were looking for parts to cobble together a second bicycle, with dreams of earning enough to buy themselves a used car so they could do stick-ups at the liquor stores. The morning, just a few miles away, four black girls had died when a KKK bomb exploded at the 16th Street Baptist Church. I'm suspicious of that thing, too. Boy, they use that. They beat us over the head with that all the time. As they flew down the Dacina to Sandusky Road, the Ware brothers, 16-year-old James pedaling, Virgil 13 balancing on the handlebars, had not heard of the bombing and had no idea how dangerous it was to be out that day. Michael Farley and Larry Joe Sims, two 16-year-old white boys, were riding a motorbike down the same road, and miniature Confederate flags flap behind them, and when they came across two friends who said they'd seen a couple of black kids throwing rocks up the way, Farley reportedly opened his jacket to reveal a recently purchased 22 caliber pearl-handled pistol, saying, "We'll take care of them," unquote. As they approached the two black boys, Farley handed the pistol to Sims. Sims fired twice, and Virgil fell. At 64, James Ware's memory of that day is still vivid. Ware, Virgil gasped as his older brother leaned over him, "I'm shot." "No, you're not," James recalled saying. "Get up." But his brother, wounded in the cheek and the chest, never moved or spoke again. Farley and Sims were arrested and charged with first-degree murder. Sims, an Eagle Scout, claimed that his eyes were closed when he shot, and that he was only trying to scare the other boys, which is probably true. After a jury convicted Sims of second-degree manslaughter, Farley pleaded guilty to the same charge. Each was sentenced to 7 months suspended. Well, they got a pretty good break there. James Ware received his letter in late March. Despite the light sentences, the two men could not be retried in state court. Jeopardy was attached, and a 5-year statute of limitations precluded federal civil rights charges against anyone in the case, the letter said. James Ware never accepted that the shooting was an accident, but he had long ago accepted the apologies of Farley and Sims and had considered the case closed. If nothing else, the renewed investigation rescued Virgil from obscurity, he says. Quote, "I don't see what else could be done. He got full recognition. That's what I wanted for him to be known about." But to some families who have waited decades for justice, the FBI's letters have brought no peace. When lounge manager Jasper Greenwood went missing in Vicksburg, Mississippi on June 21, 1964, his family immediately suspected foul play. The FBI was told that Greenwood was allegedly last seen in the company of two white men. By the time his body was found 8 days later on the roadside outside Vicksburg, it was badly decomposed. A coroner's inquest failed to identify the cause of death. Linda Galvin, Greenwood's granddaughter, says it was a cover-up. Well, it could have been. The black funeral home told me that he was castrated and he had what looked to be a stab wound in his throat area, Galvin told the AP. None of that showed up on the FBI report. But according to the FBI's letter to the family, agents had interviewed funeral home director W.H. Jefferson in 1964, and he denied that he thought the hole had been caused by anything other than nature. The Bureau obtained a copy of the Vicksburg Police Department report, which concluded that Greenwood had suffered a fatal heart attack while meeting with a married woman on the local Lover's Lane. Family members have suggested that Greenwood might have been a targeted for his close association with assassinated NAACP activist Medgar Evers. But the letter noted that Charles Evers, then the NAACP's Mississippi field director, told the FBI that Greenwood was not active in voter registration efforts in the civil rights movement. None of that satisfies Greenwood's daughter, Rosemary Domino? Of Jacksonville, Florida. If they say it's closed, then it's closed, she said, but the FBI can be wrong. Oh, no. Oh, you're kidding. The famous but incompetent can be wrong? The family of Adlena Hamlet and Bertia Kigler also have lingering doubts. Hamlet, 78, was a retired schoolteacher and one of the first blacks to register to vote in Tallahatchie County, Mississippi. Kigler, 57, was an organizer for the NAACP, who had sued local sheriff after she was prevented from paying her poll tax. Each had testified before a congressional commission in support of the Voting Wrongs Act of 1965. The woman died on January 11, 1966, as they were returning home from a secret meeting in Jackson with the U.S. Senator Robert F. Kennedy. For years, the relatives and certain researchers have insisted that the car was run off the road by the Klan. Bo. Bad boys. Kigler's granddaughter, Nina Zachary, 76, wept as she described seeing the body at the funeral home. Kigler appeared to have been decapitated. Woo. I didn't know they had ISIS back then. Zachary was told to drive by the driver of the car, Grafton Gray, supposedly played dead and could hear the women being tortured. Quote, when my family members would try to talk to him, he would not talk, she recently told AP. The FBI tracked down the wreck's lone survivor, backseat passenger Richard Simpson, a white activist from Massachusetts. Oh, there we go. The liberal boy. Who confirmed the basic details contained in the Mississippi Highway Patrol report. The Bureau's letter said the accident report said a car on the wrong side of the road struck the activist head-on. Quote, the impact caused the hood of the car to break loose and move through the windshield, fatally injuring Hamlet and Kegler. I guess that's what chopped her head off. On a glorious sunny spring day this year, two FBI agents appeared at 79-year-old Lila Hamlet's door in Kansas City, Missouri, to deliver their letter. Dated, it's a wonder they don't get mugged going down through East St. Louis. It said there was insufficient evidence to indicate that a racially motivated homicide occurred. The agent asked if Hammond had any questions. She had lots, but she didn't bother asking. If the letter was intended to provide closure, it failed. Quote, it's just another unsolved case, she says. Whatever it was, it'll never be revealed now. Well, there's quite a bit more of this story. I'm not going to finish it, but the main thing is to go back to the genesis of the whole thing. Blacks and whites attempting to live side by side through a halfway program of segregation. And segregation was more a construct of capitalist business and corporations than anything else. It never could work in the long run. If you have two races living side by side, either they're going to have to separate totally, absolutely, or integrate totally, absolutely. So they decided to forcefully integrate, and they had to break down the South first. Of course, a lot of those ideas that the blacks had adopted came right out of the Communist Party's Principle 10. And I knew Leonard Patterson. He used to speak for the John Birch Society, and he was a longshoreman, a big black guy. He was about 6'8" or something. And he dwarfed me. But anyhow, he told how the Russian agents were promoting big time miscegenation and race mixing. And they just furnished a lot of liquor and a lot of white horse to these guys to get blacks into the Communist Revolution or desired Communist Revolution. So that's a fact that under the communist system in the Soviet Union, they were in the front, one of those in the front of promoting racial integration in this country. And then, of course, on the other side, the big business started pushing it too when they saw they could make some kind of money out of it. But the whole thing is based upon the fact the black race cannot live in a white society, or a white society cannot live in a black society. And until they get that idea of equality out of their head, it's going to get worse and worse and worse. This will end up in a civil war of some type. And it'll include the mestizos too, and maybe some Asians. I don't know. So there's no way back now. There's no way of stopping it. It's going to happen. When it's going to happen, I don't know. Worse is better. But for now, for sure, it's destroyed America as we once knew it. That's for sure.
In a statement, Ford Attorney General Pam Bondi announced her office, along with the FBI, had arrested three members of the Ku Klux Klan, two of which are current correctional employees. Ford officials say they plan to kill the former inmate in retaliation for a fight between the black inmate and 25-year-old Thomas Driver, a DOC employee. Driver, along with the other two, 47-year-old David Moran and 42-year-old Charles Newcomb, a former prison employee, now face one state count of conspiracy to commit murder for allegedly plotting to kill a former inmate after his release from prison. The Attorney General's office is expected to prosecute the case in Columbia County. In a statement, DOC Secretary Julie Jones says the department does not tolerate racism or prejudice of any kind, adding her agency is working to, quote, terminate the employees and assist in their prosecution. For WFSU News, I'm Sasha Kortner.
This is why, for a long, long time, there was racial separation inside the prisons. Because when the minute they started, and the prison guards in California resisted it very strongly because they knew what would happen, putting them together. And, of course, now there's a lot less whites in the prisons, and it's the mestizos battling the Negroes, and they don't separate them either. They separate pretty much out on the yard, but inside they force them together and even force them to bunk together. And that causes a lot more killing in the prisons. Well, that's it, boys and girls, for this day of the 4th of April, 2015, Saturn's Day. I'll be back with you Monday with more info, and I've got some hot new stuff to give you, too. Yeah, 14.5.